Many of you will have met Graham Harrison yesterday. He's waving. He's a photo historian, photographer's history of photography, photo history's website.
Is
your baby, but I'm not going to ask you to introduce yourself again,
right,
if that's okay, and unless there's anything else you want to add. Joe Booth is a researcher looking into this as her PhD research, this whole question of the National Collections and Museum and the future thereof. So I'm going to ask her in a moment to introduce herself, and I'm going to just start by asking Anne McNeil to introduce herself and to add anything to the debate at this stage. And if I ask Graham, are you okay just to contribute, I think, because you talked quite a lot yesterday, if that's all right, just to, I won't ask you to give us openings.
He's a difficult photographer.
Yeah, yeah, but if you...
I mean, the thing is that there are not many photographers sitting up here.
Not many.
Well, in terms of actually editorial people who've gone out and take photographs, deal on a day-to-day basis with taking photographs. It's not a criticism, but
But that's okay, because today is about who's in the audience. It's completely about that. In a sense, you're here. But I am just going to quickly ask Anne McNeil to introduce herself, Director of Impressions Gallery, but do add anything you'd like to.
Okay, thank you. I'm quite glad we're in a panel setup. I was dreading following Francis and that fantastic performance. It was like, crikey. Sort of thinking, oh yeah, I'm from the cottage industry and photography, which is the independent public funded sector. I take on board what Paul has been saying and trying to couch today in today's discussion as positive forward thinking. And someone said recently when we were having a discussion about this, yeah, there's nothing like having an opportunity out of a crisis. So I think in anything that I'm going to say now, it's in the spirit of this opportunity and being positive. I do think there are, I do have a couple of anxieties, and again, Michael, it's not against you personally because you know how I respect you. I've got a confusion about what the Media Museum is putting out about what is the future of photography. I've been at lots of presentations where it's been clearly stated it's the STEM agenda, science, technology, engineering, and whatever M is. Maths, sorry, never good at maths. You know, and today you sort of gave confidence that you will be going to carry on with photography. And then we had that discussion about the, you know, the National Collection going to London, what's art, what's science. We decided not to go down that route just yet. So my concern is, some of you may know this, some of you may not, but over a period of 4 years, Impressions Gallery worked with the curators at the Media Museum. It was a joint idea between the then curator, Philippa Wright, and myself, because we had the problem that Impressions Gallery was established in 1972, which seems to be quite a big year, we found out this morning, for photography. And we've got a fantastic archive and collection and papers and objects that kind of mirrors the history and the rich history of British photography. Now, we are not a collecting museum. We don't have curators like that per se. And Philip and I saw the problem as, how can we get that out? How can we make that accessible? And so we did a lot of work, and we got valuable, invaluable support from Brian Liddy, the curator, and Greg Hobson to make this happen. It was a four-year process, and our archive only physically left our building in Bradford in September. In the contract, it says it is going to stay as an intact archive, so it's staying in Bradford, but it's going to be part of the National Photography Collection. So my anxiety is, where is the National Photography Collection? What's, you know, I don't know the answer to this. What are we going to do with Impressions Archive? I was given reinsurances that staying Bradford, which is quite dear to my heart, because it had local significance. Again, I would argue Impressions Gallery Photography Archive is not a local archive. It's got national and international photographic significance. And my other worry, and I've seen this as the Director of Impressions, I'm worried about the changes that are happening at the Media Museum with the loss of the valuable curators. Who is going to care for our archive under this new regime and the STEM agenda? Now, I was trying to be positive, but I had to say that. Being positive then, it was good to hear the V&A and National Media Museum sort of saying they want to be part of the debate, they want to listen to us. I'm going to mirror what Francis said. It's a shame it came to this point that we're here, that these consultations and debates didn't happen across the board with different stakeholders. And I'm also going to state, in my dealings with the senior management at the SMG Science Museum Group, I have found their attitude at sometimes to be arrogant. So I don't mind putting that out in the public. That was me being positive, Paul. I don't know the answers well, and thank you, Sarah, for what you brought up. Again, many of you know the history of Impressions. It was established by Val Williams in 1972 in New York. We were there to 2005 at the invitation of Bradford Council. We took the bold move and left York and built a brand new space for contemporary photography in Bradford. Bradford gets under your skin. And as we saw earlier in the film we saw this morning, Bradfordians are good at kicking up a fuss. You know, they campaigned to have the theatre changed, not to whatever it was, to keep it and made it into the Media Museum. 2 years ago, when the Media Museum was under threat of closures, Bradford people came out and, you know, campaigned to save it. There's a lot of love for that institution in the city. Bradford Council, even a cash-strapped council, have been very supportive. I'm glad that it was saved. But now the institution in Bradford, people feel, they feel hurt, to use emotion language. It's like, what's, when you don't, I know, when you work in a city that doesn't have much, and again, Colin touched on the economics of, or was it, it was Michael. When you don't have much in the city, what you have, you really, really value. And so it's the symbolic thing of losing the Royal Photographic Society. Again, I'm here to look to the future. I don't know what it is, but I just think place is important, North South is important, all the government policy which comes and goes. And again, I don't know if it's a building, I don't know what it is, but speaking with the politicians in Bradford, you know, this is quite unheard of. There's cross-party support to try and find a solution that keeps some sense of national photography in the city. And we've even got the support, who's champion it, of the new MP for Bradford South, Judith Cummings. So again, I'm here to listen to everybody and assimilate it, but I just want to submit that plea for national photography and Bradford.
Thank you very much. I want to just check. Bradford is the fourth largest...
growing youngest population in the metropolitan area.
That's completely done. What did you say? Well, yeah, but a young city.
It's a very young city, yeah.
But I think possibly the fourth largest metropolitan district.
Fourth largest metropolitan district. In the country. Thank and you. Growing. It's got the fastest rising people.
Joe, I'm going to ask you to say a few words again, a little bit about your research... what you're finding out, anything you want to add.
Okay, thank you. Hello, my name's Jo Booth. I have to perhaps preface what I'm going to say by saying that I worked at the Media Museum for 16 years. I mean, I know I don't look old enough, but I was there for 16 years, and it does get under your skin, and I've got an awful lot of different responses to it. I really enjoyed the debate this morning, and particularly what people that are sitting up here now have said. And I kind of agree with everything that everybody's said, but in a lot of ways, I'm not here really to talk about my opinions. Although I think it's important that we do acknowledge that this loss of a single institution that looks after the breadth of photography has created a lot of debate and a lot of emotional response, like you said, Anne. And also this bigger thing about the lack of consultation is really quite an issue, because the sector is large and it's unwieldy and it's complicated and it's got so much diversity within it. And then the other thing that's raised a lot of concern, which Francis mentioned as well, is the timescale of what's actually been happening. And we've all, you know, a lot of people have invested a lot of time thinking about all of these questions. But it does obviously raise the question about who protects it, who, as Francis said before, who speaks for photography, and all the other concerns that go alongside that. Michael this morning mentioned, you know, concerns about the exploitation, the exporting of photography, and so on. But of course, what we need to do now is work out kind of what. The point at which we are at now and means that it's necessary for us to think about what is needed and what we need to do now. So work out and identify and perhaps name very categorically in a way all our various stakeholders to make sure that everybody's represented and is heard. The areas of what you've called, Sarah, the areas of necessity. I rather liked that, I might use that. So my PhD began in 2013, actually, which predates all this debate. And my original question, although I didn't really say it out loud until about somewhere in the middle of 2014, possibly even 2015, was, do we need a new National Museum of Photography? And I mentioned before that I worked there for a long time. I left following the first round of it, well, the first of this round of redundancies, which was in 2011. But since 2006, there was a lot of changes within the museum. And around 2006, 2007, I forget the date. I'm sorry, but there was other people made redundant and some more staff changes then. That was the point at which Russell Roberts left us, and various other people as well. And also the museum started talking about extending its remit to include the web and radio and gaming and all sorts of different things. And photography seemed to me at that point to be just getting further and further down the priority list. And so that question, the question that I dared not speak, was whether we about this new National Museum of Photography, was kind of born of all of those kind of 10 years of developments before that. So I started looking at the history of the... I started my study looking at the history of the Media Museum, tracing it back, as people have mentioned this morning, to South Kensington. And it is interesting. I've been looking also at the developments of the 1970s, the 1970s and photography, wow. But now this current debate about the move of... this collection that we're discussing, it's really brought this question, this new National Museum question to the fore. Although it does seem, and so what I've been doing recently is speaking to people within the sector. I've spoken to a number of people, but really I've only just started doing the research. So I've spoken to people that represent the independent photography sector, I've spoken to photographers, and I've spoken to curators, and I've spoken to loads more people informally. And it's kind of widely recognised that the idea of a new National Museum is a difficult proposition at the moment, however much we or some of us might kind of like the idea. So I started asking people in the field what an alternative might be and what we might need, what photography needs to represent it and protect it and speak for it. And also bearing in mind what's been happening at the library at Birmingham, of course, as well, which is another huge issue that we haven't really mentioned very much yet. There's been a lot of talk amongst the people, a lot of interest in some kind of network being set up, and obviously Paul's mentioned this morning the subject-specific network that's being worked on right now. So really all I want to say is to just tell you what people have been saying to me, which is that we need to be mindful within our discussions going forward and within the conversations that we have subsequently and this afternoon as well, pertinently, about who we actually represent, who gets looked after within this new network, however it looks, and that we do need to make sure that we represent photographers. Photographers in many cases that have donated their collections to museums or certainly pieces of work, as well as the independent gallery sector, who in many cases have looked after the early careers, as Anne described very clearly to me when I interviewed her, who've looked after the early careers of photographers before they perhaps move into a position where they start being interesting to national organisations. So the kind of the importance of that kind of work that's done right at the early stage of people's careers. There's a massive investment there, not least of which public funding investment via public monies. So the independent gallery sector, photographers, commercial photography, as was mentioned this morning by Francis, educationalists, of course, and the kind of everyday experience. I think Pippa put forward a question this morning that raised that idea of, who speaks for the vernacular in a way, who looks after the ordinary everyday stuff. So all of these kind of, and in a way, I'm kind of echoing what you were saying, Sarah. It's kind of how do we look after all of these different interests? How do we make sure that we cover everybody, because it is unwieldy, and maybe maybe a national foundation for photography or a distributed model is something that we wish to give further further thought to this afternoon. But certainly, again, this idea that Francis has put forward very, very clearly about the absence of a national policy is something that we should be thinking about as well.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much. And now, Graham, you mentioned the voice of the difficult photographer.
No, I mean, to be practical, this is something that Neil McDermott and I and Simon Cross were discussing on the landing here, and we're joined by Francis, that to actually go out as a working editorial photographer, you're given a problem which you have to solve, and Brian here as well knows this, that you're given a limited amount of time, sometimes a limited amount of time with a person, and you have to solve that problem visually. And if you don't, you won't get any more work, or your project sort of flounders or whatever. So it's that's why photographers get stroppy, because they have the pressure to complete something come up with something creative, visual, and fulfilling the brief within a limited amount of time. And it's the sort of pressures that everyone else who's involved in photography don't quite understand, understandably, because they're not having to deal with that situation. You're not actually on the street. You've got to photograph somebody. You've got to solve this problem. Maybe the person's not turned up. So, I mean, Pete Jenkins, who was here yesterday, was saying, talking about that he's sent on a job, and there's somebody's not, you know, the arrangement hasn't been made correctly. He's been told to be in a certain place at a certain time. Nobody's there. So the photographer's job is then to resolve that. You find, you track down the person, or you knock on doors, and you know, you've still got, your job is still to turn up or return with the photograph. So that's why photographers are difficult.
Well, also, as lucky, there's many of them here, so because we've got 4 hours to resolve the problem in an inventive, creative way.
But sort of just going on from what Joe's just saying, I think we have to, you know, recognise the diversity of photography, which goes from Martin's wonderful Paul Strand exhibition on at the moment, which is a very sort of sensitive and beautifully curated show, which gives you this sort of the level of what can be done in the British Museum, a British Museum.
Except it comes from Philadelphia.
It can be done in the British Museum, but it actually didn't.
It came from somewhere else.
Right. Okay. Can be done. Thank you.
I'm going to stop you in
but,
a second.
But I was going to say, what we need is an ecology.
I'm going to invite, to start with, the photographers who are here, and in particular, I think there's one or two photographers who have work in the Bradford Collection here at the moment, to, if they have anything they'd like to say around that, or anything about what you've heard. So I don't want to put Simon or Francis on the spot, or Neil, if he's here, but if there's anything you as would like to say now about what your feeling is about your own work in the collections, and I don't have a definitive list of what's held in Bradford, so I'm guessing. Do you want to just take a mic?
Yeah.
Yeah, Simon.
Hi, Simon Roberts. It was more just, it'd be kind of interesting to have a clarification of what's actually happening in terms of this transition of work. I mean, we're talking here about, or we hear about, the RPS collection, but actually, as Anne mentioned earlier, there's a huge amount of other work in Bradford's collection, which seemingly is either going to be left and closed because all of the staff have been lost. So will there be any public access to any of that work? Or it's going to be siphoned off to somewhere or to some people or whatever. So I just, for me, it would just be the kind of clarification of what's going to happen to that, because there are, you know, there is very important work there. I'm not saying mine is at all important, but just to kind of get a sense of what is, can we have some clarification around that?
That's a kind of outcome, and I think, and my understanding from Michael is that that's not necessarily all resolved yet, is it? I don't know if you want to talk about that now. Could I ask you to hold that thought, and I don't know if any of the other photographers here would like to chip in. I'm just kind of willing you to raise your hands at this point because, you know, thank you very much. Yes, please. Mike, wait for the mic, please.
Hi, I'm Neil McDermott. Somebody mentioned my name earlier. One of the points I wanted to raise really was, I think it was about, which we haven't discussed about, was the London question, and about all the funding supposedly going to London. One of the points I'd like to make about that is I don't see enough talk about some of the existing institutions that we have around the country. I mean, I know Anne's here from Impressions, but I'd like to say that there isn't enough talk about some of the other great photography institutions, galleries that we have around the country. Because these, as a photographer, these are pure photography galleries. And while we talk about the V&A and when we talk about the Tate Gallery, those are not photography galleries. Those are museums which have other, you know, things joined in with them. And if we're going to come here and talk about having a national photography gallery, we need to talk about those other institutions which are pure photography galleries and say how successful they have been. I know they're under huge funding difficulty at the moment, but I just don't see enough talk about some of the amazing exhibitions that have happened around the country in the last few years. I mean, last year I went to the Forever Amber exhibition, which was a part of, organized by the Site Gallery, and it is one of the best exhibitions I've seen since the 1990 Magnum exhibition, which was very influential to me, which was at the Hayward Gallery. And I find it dumbfounding that an exhibition like that didn't travel around the country, didn't go internationally as far as I'm aware, and even didn't really make much press. I mean, the only person I saw that reviewed it, I mean, I may be completely wrong, was The Independent, and I think that was online. You know, and I would like to see us talk a little bit more about those galleries around the country, and in some ways, whether they could get together. And I'd also like to see some of the big institutions, whether it's maybe the Victoria and Albert, or whoever they are, actually mentioning these galleries in their talk online and saying, you know, we're really pleased to see an exhibition at Impressions are at Stills Gallery in Edinburgh, and hook in with them. Because, you know, I think these galleries are doing really great things under very difficult circumstances, and they are pure photography galleries. And I only speak as a photographer, and, you know, to be honest, I'm not really that interested in the other things that some of these institutions do. And I think as photographers and people who are interested in photography, we need to stand up and say, you know, we are photography, we're not other things, we want photography to be photography. And bringing up the discussions about the National Media Museum, media, what does that word mean? I mean, it doesn't mean anything. And I think it just needs people to stand up and say straightforward things. Like, if we want photography to be photography, let's just be photography. Let's not be part of another institution. And I think we can make it happen, whether it's a national organization or anything like that, I'm not sure. But unless we talk about it, it won't happen. And one other thing that somebody else has said, it's difficult at this time. It's not difficult. It's probably the best time to have an organization, because photography is bigger and more important than it ever has been. And if we can't do it now, then it won't happen, because photography will maybe slide down as other media things come along. So now is the time. Grab the nettle, is what I say.
Thank you very much. Well said. I'm going to, I think the next hand I saw, and Michael, I'll ask you to hold your thoughts for a little longer, but to come to Hilary Roberts in the third row.
Hi there. For those that don't know me, I'm research curator of photography at the Imperial War Museum, where we hold in excess of 11 million images, which relate to conflict. The collection spans from, it predates the Crimea, and it comes right bang up to date. And it covers all the forms of photography, documentary art, those by professional photographers, freelance, employed, those by amateurs, and those by official photographers employed. Now, in that role, it is one of the most influential collections in terms of its subject matter, conflict photography. But we do not lay claim to owning everything or you know, what we try and do is act as an ambassador for this form of photography, and where galleries, photographers, other collections, Impressions Gallery, whoever it may be, are doing projects, then I and my team will do the level best to support, promote, advocate in whatever way we can. I thought Sarah's proposals were a real ray of light, fresh air. I once sat on a body called the Committee of National Photographic Collections, which in some ways aspired to address some of these points. The question of what was a national photographic collection and what the purpose of the committee should be was something which was constantly debated year in and year out. And I personally felt that the membership of it to do justice to the subject needed to be expanded, but the problem was resourcing. It, you know, we were a group who certainly could act as spokespeople on behalf of not only the institutions that we came from, but others with whom we dealt in our sector. But we had no funding. We relied on the support of our parent institutions to get things done. And as time went on, that would disappeared and went away. So the point that you addressed in terms of an endowment recognises a very important need in terms of any body of that nature. What I would finally say is that I do think that to remain, retain the broadest possible involvement, you need to acknowledge the diversity, you need to be inclusive, you need to be collaborative, and communications are absolutely key. Unfortunately, in the 21st century, those communications don't necessarily rely on us all travelling huge distances. There are ways of doing this. So I'm very willing, in my small way, to do what I can to support any efforts in that respect. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Do I see any more hands? Oh, come on. What's wrong with you? Yes, David. Yep.
Hello. I just wanted to sort of agree with sort of the tenet of Anne's argument, really, around the location of the collections. If I understood Michael's argument earlier, part of the reason for the withdrawal of the collection from Bradford was social deprivation. And is that not the case?
No.
No?
So that part of what I was talking about was, you know, I was setting up a number of different contexts, and one of the contexts I wanted to talk about in relation to the city of Bradford was to describe the economic context in the city of Bradford and not ignore the fact of the economic context of the city of Bradford. And I think that fits into the what we'd heard before about the long history of the National Media Museum being established in 1983. And there's a lot of work on this as well. I wasn't arguing that we need to withdraw them because there are problems in Bradford, but what I was saying, it is a fact that there is very significant challenges around economic development and education within the city of Bradford, and that is part of the context which we operate in as an institution. So that's not a reason for it, but is a factor which is significant in all of our thinking and what we're trying to achieve as a museum as a whole.
Can I just jump in there? Yeah, yes, we're on, all aware of the your perceived problems and the real problems of Bradford, but to be quite frank, why does that involve changing a remit of a museum that operates in that city?
Sorry, just Henry, hold on, please. Back to David. I think you wanted to.
The point I really wanted to make was that the reverse should be true. If there's any sense of social deprivation, then to remove an artistic resource is the wrong thing to do.
Okay, so. Okay, I mean, yes, obviously. But I think in a sense, we've got 5 minutes. I would like to take any more kind of forward-looking suggestions at this point. I think what we want to do in the next 5 minutes is explain what's going to happen next, but with a list of kind of ideas, questions. Quite a lot have already been proposed to get our teeth into. We understand that, I completely understand these questions you're talking about, and I think we all know what we're talking about here, so I don't think we need to go too much more into that. But David, did you finish what you were saying? You did. There will be, so we have a significant amount of time this afternoon to talk about it, I think, which will allow that debate at least, and then there will be feedback, so if that's okay. Henry, yeah, please, just briefly. Do you want to use a mic, please?
No, I just to add to the lady from the Imperial War Museum, I mean, I suppose one of the issues with photography is it's so diverse, you know, and this notion of the subject-specific group that you're developing, you know, is an important thing, because there's so many other museums and institutions have collections of photography that are vitally important to their subject matter. And so going forward, whatever organisation or body there is can signpost to that as well. I mean, if you look at the RGS or the Alpine Club or the Scott Polar Institute, you know, they've all got image collections specific to adventure or travel or whatever, just as the Imperial War Museum has images, you know, specific to conflict or whatever. So, you know, there's some umbrella organisation to signpost people to specific things, but that organisation needs a core collection. And to me, the RGS collection is the core heart of any organisation that then signposts out to other subject-specific bodies.
Okay, any more questions? Brief questions, please. We only have 5 minutes. Brett Rogers in the middle there. Thanks. If you wait for the mic, thanks.
Just to take up on Neil's point, as director of the Photographers' Gallery, I hope this afternoon that we can redress your point, because what's being missed out today is that it's always been a mixed ecology between the museum's collections and the network of independent galleries, such as Anne's and the Photographers' Gallery, and we're all part of the discussion. I don't really go along with who speaks on behalf of photography as though we should or the National Museum of Photography should, because these days nobody speaks on behalf of that medium. It's far too diverse. It's the most democratic medium. We're always talking about that. And, you know, that it would be foolhardy to put ourselves in the position of being the authoritative voice for photography on behalf of the UK. And I don't think any other institution in this room would wish to do so. So I'm not sure that's the right way to be examining that question. I do think we have to go back to examining the mixed ecology of how we all work together. And I really do applaud Sarah Fisher's brave initiative. I think it's the way forward and that we should all be discussing and seeing whether that does offer us some ideas for sharing some ways that we can all work together and bring this network that we've been talking about into a new way, because foundations very much at the moment are appealing to funders, institutions, as everybody in this room who's been through a capital project knows, are not the way, and we don't really need another building-based project. So a network that, through a foundation, could offer us all support and a way forward, and could come to what Francis is talking about, a mutually agreed policy, in inverted commas, about the future of photography, could, I feel, offer us a solution.
Good, thank you very much, thank you. Any final comments or questions? Yes, sorry, there's one there.
Hi, I'm Greg Hobson from National Media Museum. Most of you know me, I think. I'm not going to comment about the museum, but there are a couple of things that I do want to say, which I hope will feed into discussions this afternoon. One of them is about the idea of distributed networks. When we talk about having a voice in photography, I think what Francis is really referring to, I hope I'm right here, Francis, is this idea of policy. And the lack of policy is why things like distributed networks don't work. And I'll just give you a very quick, specific example so that I'm not using rhetoric, which I think we heard quite a lot of already this morning. And that is the way in which the Regional Arts Council bodies used to work. So they used to individually fund projects. One example is Daniel Meadows' project when he travelled around the country doing his bus project in the 70s. in each of the regional arts areas that he worked in, he made a body of work for those regional arts bodies. None of those can be found now. They've all disappeared, bar one, which is in the side gallery, which is the only institution which had enshrined in their constitution that they would care for that collection, which is a single very, very significant thing in terms of when we think about whether a national photography policy is important and actually whether a building is important, which I would argue that it is. And I would give the example of the new building in Wakefield, at the Hepworth. Yeah, and you know, I'm sure people here would think that that's a really great thing, not just for Wakefield, but for sculpture. Would it be better to have a distributed network for Barbara Hepworth's sculpture so it was just distributed around the place? Some places able to care for it, some not, and able to distribute it as they would see fit if funding required so.
Paul, please, can I just chip in very quickly? Please. When I talk about who speaks for photography, I'm talking about lobbying, really. That because it's a series of cottage industries, because lots of different kinds of photographic activities don't connect to others, there's been a historic chronic failure of lobbying for photography, both at public level for funds, but also in terms of politics. If you look at other media, other art forms, that's not so. What happens is that senior people in the theatre, whoever they are, director of the National Theatre, suddenly feel able to step outside their role and to speak on behalf of the whole of theatre for a reform to education policy for A-level students in drama or something of that kind. And photography's always lacked that. No single leader of photographic institutions that I can recall has ever spoken on behalf of the other photographic activities. So what you have is not so much the question of policy that I'm concerned about for today, but that actually we've looked around and lots of people who've done their jobs within their sector of photographic activity, well or ill, have not felt empowered to speak on behalf of the whole. And that's led to increasing fractionalization and increasing not looking to each other's advantages, and it makes this networking possibility that we're talking about harder.
Yes, Sarah.
Just a really quick one on that, and I agree. And actually, I'm not sure. If one talks on behalf of something, you can come from your position. So if it's the National Theatre talking on behalf of the theatre, the whole of the theatre sector don't feel aggrieved that the National Theatre is standing up and saying this should happen for theatre. I think we shouldn't be tentative about this. We all love photography. We think it's incredibly important. But I also think it is very important, but how we acknowledge it as important. So that's what you're talking about when you're talking about lobbying. We need to kind of find voices outside of ourselves. We can all sit here and talk about how much we love photography and how much we'd like to take photography forward. And it's, you know, the debate has been really, really interesting. And when it comes down to if we did manage to lobby for and enable an endowment fund of some sort, which could further all of our objectives, if we did get to that stage, we would have to develop some kind of, you know, policy which we agree on as much as we possibly can. And it would be about market failure, because actually we're talking about how do we invest in photography in the areas in which, if we're talking about public money, in the areas in which the commercial sector cannot fill that void. But this is my perspective. But actually the question ultimately is, do we have to be everything to lobby for photography? I don't think so. I think all of us individually, even if we're not, Open Eye Gallery is not a major institution. It's a fairly modest institution. It's been around for 40 years, and it's got a great history, and hence the great archive. But I think it's my responsibility to talk for photography. And I think perhaps the split from the outside, looking in, the fact that there are specialists and really strong interest groups within photography is fantastic. Those are the people you need to go to talk about commercial photography or to talk about photography in relation to what's happening in conflict internationally.
but they're also the people that recognise how photography actually operates in the world. Maybe in their particular field, but they're passionate about photography. Every one of us, if we feel able to talk about photography, we should champion photography as a whole and not feel that we have to actually champion our area of photography. I think maybe that's been the issue. If everybody's championing their own area of photography, that's why we don't have a voice.
I agree, but sorry, can I
briefly answer? Yep.
Not only do I agree, but if you look around, there are substantial, large industries that depend for their existence upon photography. Not just the obvious ones, pop music. Pop music obviously depends on, without photography, there is no pop music. That's clear. But also the travel industry, certain aspects of the press. I mean, I've never seen a Condé Nast scholarship for a single photographer. I notice that these industries don't pay their dues to the practice which gives the root of the money that they generate. I find that peculiar. If you look elsewhere, people who do benefit from contemporary art by and large chip something into contemporary art because it looks bad if they don't. There's a lobbying pressure on them to do so. Photography's missed that stage, and it's missed it across a very broad spectrum of activity. My sense is we haven't started to chip away at available money from the commercial sector that can be targeted into non-commercial photographic activities. We've barely begun to ask. Really barely begun to ask. There's a very large number of people very enthusiastically interested in photography. In other countries, they're beginning to kind of fork out a bit when they can. Here, we haven't got our act together to make a collective voice heard, even though not every benefit will be collective. And that seems to me achievable.
We've got to stop. We've got to pause. I'm sorry, I know a few people had their hands up. Sorry about that. But we do have to pause here. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen now, what we propose happens now, is lunch. But then immediately after lunch, we're going to divide up, there's roughly 80 people in this room, we're going to divide up into four groups of 20 and talk through some of the ideas. And I'm going to ask Michael to bring up the slide of the suggested thoughts, but also obviously consider the things that have been raised today. So I'm going to tell you how you're going to, I suggest you divide up into the groups, see what you think, and that involves moving to the other mic seamlessly. If Brian Griffin holds his hand up, so you can all see where he is. Thank you very much. The people to the right of Brian, down to... Yes, this bit down to this row. If you are group one, okay? Will you remember that? Group one. Yep. To the left of Brian, or maybe including Brian, group two. You can split yourself, yes. I'm then also going to ask the people up to the gentleman with the check shirt, and this quarter is group three, okay? Will you remember that? Three, excluding the speakers, because I'll tell you what to do later. And then from you to the right and this corner, group four. Okay, so you got the numbers, that's the easy bit. You latecomers, you're going to have to, I think, go to, this looks like the smaller group.
Yeah, we're reviewing.
You're reviewing, okay. Okay, thank you anyway. Right, that's the easy bit. Group one will go to somewhere called the Forge, okay? And you will forge out some ideas, and you'll go with Joe Booth. So group one to the Forge with Joe, with a candlestick in the dining room. group two with Anne to the meeting room on level one. Whoop. In this building. Hey?
It's easy to find, that's good.
Meeting room level one in this building.
Why don't we get to go to the
Forge? You get to go with me.
We've got
to the meeting room.
Group three with Sarah to the green room.
Is that here?
That is in the building, level one. The group three with Sarah to the green room. But I think
You're going to, there's a lot of people are going to want to talk to you, so I'll tell you how that might work later, okay? Group three with Sarah to the green room. Group four with Francis right in here, okay? And
how
that's going to happen. Hey, moaning? No, what? Good. We're all good.
Observing.
Right, excellent. So I would ask you not to try not to swap your groups, except to say that there's perhaps, I don't know, Greg and Brian, you might want to split yourselves up, perhaps. Is that okay? I don't want to... I'll leave you to decide what you do. Yeah. Now, wait, I'm going to tell you the timings and the other stuff, so don't go yet. It's 25 past, so that 10 past 2, that's 45 minutes, you're going to get into those groups. The group that's going to the forge assemble downstairs by the front door, and you'll be led over. It's a 3-minute walk, okay? Everyone else goes straight to your rooms at that point, at 10 past 2. We then come back here at 4 p.m., to feedback and reflect. Now then, this is something I'm... After that, a smaller group, we'll probably just stick around and try to at least make a statement of some sort as to what we might have agreed today, if we've agreed anything. So I'm not saying... I think most people will want to go at 4:30, but a few of us will stop around and just try and hammer something out. So that's the plan. If you want lunch... mention format in the cafe here for a 10% discount, or go to the docks, which is very close. Someone will guide you, and or mention format, and you get a 10% discount. Or you can get Derby pikelets, which are smashed crumpets. They're very nice in the market, I'm told. So it has been it's a difficult discussion, this, and there's a lot to think about. So thank you very much for staying on topic, for being positive. And let's see where we go in this afternoon. And thank you very much to our panellists.